but I have talked about the Lakers and Rockets and what a wild night that was at Staples on Saturday. Joining us to break it down is somebody who was there, a senior NBA writer for The Athletic, Sam Amick. Sam, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Romy, doing great. Thanks for having me, brother.
Sam, it's so good to have you back, especially after a game like that. I mean, I could talk to you for an hour or more about this. I won't, but I could. So you were there Saturday night, and that was LeBron's regular season home debut. Sam, start right there. What was the atmosphere in the arena like, and what kind of a game were you expecting?
It was crazy. I mean, nobody knows the entertainment side like the Lakers and Lakerland and Staples. And so, you were going to have the celebs, and you were going to have that element. But it was on a different level. It's funny. I saw Jimmy Iovine of musical fame and Dr. Dre fame, and I'm looking at him, and Rajon Rondo had a quote about how playing with LeBron was like being with one of the Beatles back in the day. And I'm looking at Jimmy, and I'm thinking, Jimmy's one of the only dudes in the whole building who could actually make that comparison. He used to work with John Lennon. And those are the kinds of, things in the context that we're talking about here. So the vibe was on a different level. And you're sitting there trying to analyze who LeBron is going to be with the Lakers, what it means, where they're going, and kind of how it's all going to unfold. Obviously, none of us, though, saw this whole thing just going crazy like it did.
Sam Amick joining us. Very well said. Now, you had a great piece up in The Athletic detailing everything that went down. First off, you just said that we couldn't have seen what was going to happen. But before we get to the fourth quarter, did you get a sense, though, that something could happen, that there might be a fight, that there was some chippiness? Was it building to something?
Yeah, there was definite chippiness. And if I had to drill down on one play that I've since learned even more about, and I wish I think it was second quarter, but, at one point, Chris Paul is driving on the right side, Rondo in transition, trying to guard him. And I don't know if you remember it, Romy, but, Chris chucks him pretty hard going to the rim, and Rondo goes flying. And it ends up, no whistle. Chris finishes the play, and he looks in the direction of Floyd Mayweather as he goes back down the other way on the court, and he gives it the old flex, which, Chris will do that every once in a while. But then he gives it like a second flex. I mean, he was just feeling the moment how he had overpowered Rondo, and he even made like the push-up motion, which my interpretation was he's basically saying, like, Rajon needs to hit the weight room. And from what I've heard since then, like, that play really set Rondo off. And on the bench, he just, from that point on, he would not stop talking to Chris, just chirping at him like crazy. That one obviously got Rajon in a different place.
Talking to Sam Amick. All right, so that's some really good information, some new information right there. What about the two of these guys, Sam? They've also got some history, right?
Yeah, they do for sure. I mean, there's, about a decade-long kind of, just rivalry, if you want to call it that, or just kind of chippiness and tension. You got two guys that for a lot of their careers were essentially fighting for kind of their place in the point guard hierarchy within the NBA and two very different resumes, right? Like, you got Rajon, who if you look at Rondo's career through the Chris Paul filter, and these are the kinds of, trash talking that would go on over the years, Chris would characterize it as, Rajon kind of getting lucky and finding his way into Boston, getting a ring that way, playing with Hall of Famers, the type of talent that Chris typically hasn't had around him in his career. That is how Chris would get under Rajon's skin. And then coming the other way, Rondo would sit there and basically just point to his ring and rub that in Chris's face. So that's the kind of dynamic they've had. They had Team USA experiences in 2008 where Chris got a roster spot that Rajon wanted. Other stuff, 2009, they had words after a New Orleans-Boston game. So this is definitely a long time running.
I was going to say, this is a long time coming. Sam Amick joining us on the program. So, Sam, the Rockets were adamant. They were adamant that Rondo spit on Paul. Based on your review of the video, do you think that he spit on Paul?
I do. I mean, the only qualifier that I would make is that you can't judge. If you want to quibble or, debate intent and have Rajon, I mean, at some point he's going to talk again. And then the question will become, to what degree are you going to claim this was intentional or not? I'm looking at this video yesterday, and this is not just the grainy, the Bruder footage that we had on Twitter. This was a 200 megabyte video file that was shared with me, and this was the actual video that the NBA investigated. And it's funny, Romy, I got a new laptop recently with a high-res screen, and I'm looking at this thing, and it's just, like, crystal clear. And you slow it down, and, Rajon looks at Chris, and it's kind of downward, but you got spittle coming out of his mouth and landing on Chris. And if you talk to players around this league, across the board, they'll just say, like, once that happens, once you go down that road, like, it's a wrap. You know, P.J. Tucker told me that spitting for players is worse than swinging. Like, they'd rather just go ahead and haul off on me than let's fight. If you spit on me, I'm never going to forget that.
Sam, I agree. I think if you talk to human beings on this planet, they would tell you the same thing. You spit in somebody's face, that's a reason to go. We always talk about that on the program. So, Sam, that being said, if in fact he did it and the intent was there, the league announced the discipline yesterday. Ingram gets 4 games. Rondo gets 3. Paul gets 2. Do you feel like those punishments fit the various crimes?
You know, for one, you got 2 debates here. I tend to think the league was too soft across the board, because my fear going forward would be that players, I'm now looking at this calculus, and if you're a player who's upset with another player on the court, I know it's a ton of money. And the NBA is always trying to highlight the fact that, okay, well, Chris Paul lost X amount and Rondo lost this much. And yeah, it's a lot of money, but they make a ton of money, right? And so to me, the games is the more important thing. If you're a player and you just really want to give it to this dude and maybe actually go over the line and fight with him on the court, you're now thinking about, am I willing to lose 2 games? As a competitor, can I handle being sidelined for 2 games? And I think some guys might actually think the answer is yes. You know, this is much different than Carmelo Anthony getting 15 games. And, you know, last time we had a big situation like this, I think 2009, whenever that was, you know, it's a pretty wide gap between the discipline that was levied. So that's one of the debates. The other one, you know, specific to this situation, I would probably argue that Chris Paul should have gotten 1 game, in my opinion. I think, you know, he's the guy who got spit on, and then he put a finger in Rondo's face, but he didn't punch. You know, Rajon was the first one swinging. I know for a fact, you know, Chris, his family, his people, the Rockets, they definitely think that he should have gotten 1 instead of 2.
Sam Amick joining us for a couple more moments. All right, Sam, before you go, you've got another fascinating piece up on The Athletic about Jeannie Buss and how she was able to get LeBron, Kobe Bryant, and a Game of Thrones player role in this. How so?
So I sit down with Jeannie a little while back trying to recap everything that led up to them getting LeBron. We're sitting in her office, and as a reporter, it's always a fun moment when somebody just kind of says something that you didn't know before. And so that happens. Jeannie says, as we're, you know, it's about an hour long interview conversation. And she says, well, you know, as I was trying to figure out what to do with the front office with Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak still running it, I couldn't make up my mind. And so I had to go see Kobe. And so then, you know, for me, I was like, wait a minute. Like, I haven't heard this story. Like, all right, so tell me about it. So she gets on the road to go down to Newport Beach, meets with them at a restaurant near his house, and they sit there chopping it up about, all right, they had already hired Magic Johnson as an advisor, but he was not the guy running the show yet. And Kobe essentially tells her, he pulls out the Game of Thrones reference and says, you got to channel your mother of dragons and be Khaleesi, you know, for the fans of the show, and you got to go for the kill, and you got to go all the way. I mean, Kobe's strategy, his philosophy, his ethos is, you know, they're going to get you if you don't get them. And so he kind of pushes Jeannie over the edge when it comes to the way she was going to handle the situation. It's important because LeBron's people confirmed that he would not have come if they had not cleaned house and had a clean slate by the time, you know, he was trying to make his free agency decision. So that's the part that Kobe played.
That's pretty badass. One last thought. She also said that she went to school on what happened with Phil Jackson in New York. Sam, what did she learn from that whole experience?
So, and this is one where you're certainly going to get differing opinions. I mean, there's a lot of folks, you know, who just look at Phil and say that he was largely to blame for the way that went down. But I think her point is that within the kind of the internal world of the Knicks, you know, operation, you still have a lot of people who have been there for a long time and are tied to James Dolan and have differing loyalties. So if you're somebody like Phil Jackson coming in, I think her point was that he learned the hard way that, you know, when things weren't going perfectly, he didn't have the kinds of allies around him that he could have benefited from. And that's kind of, it's essentially a discussion on work culture. And so for her, I mean, honestly, Romy, going to meet her in her office, and I'll make this quick, but like we used to go get coffee all the time. And I didn't really realize it at the time, but once or twice a year, we'd get coffee off the premises. And I didn't realize until we met in her office that part of it was that because she didn't feel totally comfortable with the environment internally, she would prefer to meet different people outside because the eyes and ears were always there. And that's where Lakerland has changed, where she's trying to have everything be healthier with her at the top, making the calls, trying to turn this thing around.
Changing the culture. Sam Amick is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. Great couple of pieces that are up right now. But then that's not surprising. Sam, great job. Really good to have you on. Always look forward to the conversation, Sam.
Thank you, Jim. Likewise.
Great job, bro. Great job. Sam Amick. All right, so there's some information in that you probably did not know from the past weekend. 1-800-636-8686. We're open until the top of the hour. Pete Prisco joins us to talk some football at that point. Well done, Sam Amick, senior NBA writer for The Athletic.